Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Vayin Vav Manalu with the new Mishnah. As the Rambam in the Perashah Mishnayot says that this Mishnah really belongs in Eilu Trefot, because it's discussing about the issues of Trefot here, an important issue with regards to Trefot. The reason it's found in our Perek is because of the conclusion of the Mishnah, which is that certain things, like the Shechita, Kimi Mitaher Midei Nevela, can take away the Din of Tuma, and that is actually thematically connected with our Perek, which is that certain shechitot can remove the problem of tum'ah from, whether it's the animal, the ubar, and then even if it doesn't make it mutar ba'achila, it's still successful at removing the tum'ah, making it into a trefa rather than an nevela. For that reason, it's found here in the perek, but it does have many trappings of what we've seen in Eilu Trefot, and the discussion in the Gemara will be similar to those of Eilu Trefot, and difficult to understand without any illustration or pictures. So could I to take a look at some of the pictures that are available in order to understand the anatomy of the animal. Just as background before we start, the anatomy of the leg of the animal, which we've discussed before, it's true in the bird as well, is comprised of three large bones. That is that there's a bone that goes from the area of the hoof up to the first knee. There's a bone from the first knee to the second knee. And then there's a bone from the second knee up to the hip bone, that is what we've discussed before, which is the buku de atma, which is that ball and socket joint at the top of the leg that joins into the hip, which has the hip bone that is connected to the tailbone and the chut ha-shidra, the spinal cord. So the names of these are, first of all, the one that's at the top is called either the yerech or the kulit. So we've had these before. Again, we've discussed them in Eilu Trefot, and earlier, the top bone is that Yerech or Kulit. The second bone down is known as the Shok. And then the third bone down is known as the Arkuba Atachtona, or the Arkuba Nimkeret Imarosh. So those are the three bones that comprise the leg. The lower bone is known as the Arkuba Nimkeret Imarosh, because when they flay the animal and they hang the animal up, they make the cut along that area on the hind leg. And that cut in the hind leg is where they hang the animal from and begin the flaying of the animal from there, as well as taking out the basar. And so the two things that are severed from the animal when they begin the process, the head because of the shechita, and then the bottom of the leg where they're going to insert the hook, which we'll see later today as part of the Gemara today, in order to hang up the animal. So that's the part that's nimkeret imarosh. That also means, and Rashi says it, and most of the Rishonim also note it, that the discussion today is about the hind leg of the animal and not the foreleg of the animal. In the Gemara, the hind leg is known as the regel, the foreleg is known as the yad. And we already saw back in Eilu Trefot that the din of trefa has application by the hind leg, does not have application by the foreleg. The foreleg is considered to be a mum for an animal, so that it, if a bechor, it can then be eaten and not brought in the Mizbeach, or for Kodoshim, it would disqualify them from the Mizbeach, but it does not stop your ability to eat the animal or make it into a trefa, as opposed to the hind leg. So our discussion today will all revolve around the hind leg of the animal. Now, beyond the actual bones that are there, in between each of these large bones is a joint. And that joint is known as a berech, or we're going to see different words that are used in the Gemara for it. The lower joint, which is from the bottom long bone, the Arkuba Atachtonar, the Arkuba Nimkeret Imarosh, and the Shok has what otherwise we would call a knee, and that knee joint is comprised of six different bones. So those six different bones are identified in the Gemara, at least one of them, as the Arkom, and the Arkom, we'll see in the Daf today, is an important threshold between the upper and lower bones. Now, in terms of the word Arkuba itself, the Rishonim argue about what is classified as the Arkuba. The word Arkuba, in many cases, is like the equivalent of the modern Hebrew of Berech, which is the knee. So many believe that the Arkuba is actually the knee, the joint between the lower bone, the Arkuba, Hanim Keratim and Arosh, and the bone above that, which is the Shok, or otherwise they would call the lower leg part, the regel, and then the middle bone, the shok. And the arkuba is the piece that sits in between, the knee that sits in between. And then it's also got in the name because if that's where the severing happens, that the bone below is called the Arkuba Anim Keret Imarosh. So that gives it the name or the title Arkuba on the lower part. That's the view of Rashi and many Rishonim, that Arkuba is a reference to the knee or the joint itself. The Ramban, the Rashban, many of the Rishonim in the school of the Ramban believe that the Arkuba is not actually the knee itself, but rather the upper part of the bone. The bone itself, like the Arkuba Tachtono Anim Keret Imarosh, widens, like any bone does, towards the top of the bone. That part where it widens at the top of the bone is called the Arkuba. It's not actually the knee joint, it's actually the top of the bone where it widens, that's called the Arkuba. And there is really no nafkamina l'alocha, because they both believe that above that point is problematic. So whether it is the joint itself, or above the point of the Arkuba, which is the top of that bone, that's the area where what we're going to discuss today, that someone gidin is problematic. There is a third view of the Rosh, that the Arkuba is not a reference to the knee itself. It's not a reference to the top of the lower bone, but it's a reference to the entirety of that lowest bone. It's called the Arkuba. That's the view of the Rosh. He is seemingly soter himself between his Perush and his Chuvot, but nevertheless, that is a third opinion as to what the Arkuba is. The other thing that we're going to discuss today is the Tzomet HaGidin. The Tzomet HaGidin is, as the Mishnah is going to note, essential to the survival of the animal. If the Tzomet HaGidin is cut, then the animal is deemed a treifa. Now, the Tzomet HaGidin, again, we're going to see later on in the Gemara, Machloket, both within the Gemara as to where it's located, and then Machloket in the Rishonim as to what exactly we're speaking about. There'll be three different opinions about that. But the Tzomet HaGidin, in loose translation of English, is the junction of the tendons. It's an area where the tendons come together. In a behemah, the Gemara is going to discuss three of these gidin, these tendons that exist over there. Whereas in the chicken or the bird, which has, again, the same construct of the three bones of the leg that go up towards the body of the bird, in the bird, the junction over there has 16 chutin over there, rather than that of the animal, which only has three very large tendons that we're discussing over here. In terms of the English translations of the areas that we're speaking about, the arkum, or the berech that we're speaking about, is what's called the tubercalcis, and then the bone above that, which is the shok, is known as the tibia in the animals. There is one other thing to note, which happens to be a sidebar, but does have halachic ramifications, is how does this compare to the human leg? Because the human leg is constructed of really two large bones, and then the foot. So the question is, which bones within the animal parallel those bones in the human leg? So if you were to take it just based on the names, then the yerech would be the thigh of the individual, and the shok would be the calf. So that would mean that the knee in the human being would be equivalent to the upper knee in the leg of the animal. And then the lower knee of the animal would be equivalent to the heel of the human being. And in that way, actually the construct would be very similar, which would be that the foot would be equivalent to the Arkuba Anim Keret Imarosh, that lowest bone on the animal, which for them is upright, but for us is flat across the ground. The toes would be the similar to the hoof of the animal. The heel would be the equivalent of the first berech of the animal, which actually does fold or bend opposite the way that our knees bend, and similar to the way our heel does, opposite the way of the knee. And then they would have the shok, which would be the equivalent of our calf. And then you'd have the knee, which is the arkuba lamalo. And then you'd have the yerech, which would be the thigh. The reason that has an afkamina is because the Gemara says, with regards to a woman, shok b'isha erva. If you identify the shok, the calf, as the shok, then the requirement of concealment of that area would be all the way down to the calf, or the calf of the woman would also have to be concealed. The Chatham Sofer writes about himself that when he was very young, he came up with this huge chiddush that he thought that the arkuba that the Gemara was speaking about were not what is traditionally thought of as the upper knee and the lower knee of the animal, but rather the area towards the bottom of the arkuba tachtona of the animal, which would then be equivalent to the way it is in the human leg. And that would have brought, obviously, a huge chiddush as to where you think that some of the gidin is and other things of the like. He prepared it all and presented it to his Rebbe, and his Rebbe almost threw him out, says, it doesn't matter what you think. There is a Kabbalah, we have a Masoret as to what these things are, and that your, all the logic and everything you bring, it doesn't really matter because we have a Masoret. And you got to figure out how to fit into the Masoret not figure out how to come up with some newfangled idea. And then the Chatam Sofer writes, later on in my life, I realized that I was wrong, v'yalduti, because I found the Balei HaTosafot in Menachot that says that the shoke of the animal is not equivalent to the shoke of a human being. And that obviously makes the big difference, because if you don't build the structural leg like I did, similar to that of the animal, then you would actually have a different view as to where the shoke is in the human being. And that would be that the foot is equivalent to the parsa, the hoof of the animal. And then the, what we call the calf, would be equivalent to the arkuba tachtona of the animal. And then their first knee would be equivalent to our knee, even though it bends the opposite way. And then the, what we call the thigh, would actually be the shoke in the parlance of the Gemara, and that'd be equivalent to the shoke of the animal. If that's the case, then shoke b'yisha erva means that she has to cover her thigh to below the knee, but then the woman does not have to cover her calf. But actually has nafkamino the halacha, but know that there is this tension as to how to parallel, that's what we're seeing in the animal, towards the human anatomy and structure, and then by doing so, what implications does it have for the shoke in the human being? Where is it classified as the shoke? And again, they have the Balei HaTosafot who say that even though intuitively it would have seemed that the shoke should have been the calf, the shoke in the human body is different than the shoke in the animal's body. And again, the Rishonim bring Sukkim from Tanakh and all sorts of other proofs to try to identify where the Erech, where the shoke is, where these bones are. Right, that's just by way of background. And then the Mishnah itself is going to be very cryptic, and that is what the Gemara is going to spend time on, is trying to define the terms in the Mishnah. The first is behema shenechtechu ragla min arkuba ulamato, an animal whose leg is cut off below the arkuba, ksheira. It's not problematic, it's not a treifa, it can be shechted, eaten, it doesn't have any disqualifying qualities. Min arkuba ulamalo, from above the arkuba, psula. That actually causes a problem for the animal. It is now a treifa. And if you shecht it, it's not going to be kosher to eat. The question as to the limb itself will be dealt with at the end of the Mishnah. V'chein, shenital tzomet agidim. If you take out the tzomet agidim, the same is true. Question is, how does that relate to the two statements before in the Mishnah, which would be the first thing we discuss in the Gemara. Nishbara etzem. If the bone breaks, Imrova basar kayam shkitato mitarato. If the majority of the basar is still there on the break of the bone, then the shkita is successful being mitarato. Vim lav, if that's not the case, ain't shkitato mitarato. Then the shkita is not mitaheret. The word mitarato here, it's not clear what the antecedent is, whether it's the limb itself or whether it's the animal itself. When you say it's mitarato, is it successful at making the animal into something that's tohar? Or is it successful in making the limb? That would be an argument between Rav and Shmuel in the Gemara. The other thing that's not clear is, Nishbara Etzem, which bone are we speaking about? Where along the discussion before in the Mishnah are we discussing a bone breaking over here? Is it above the Arkuba or below the Barkuba? Again, that will be a discussion in the Gemara, Machloket Rav and Shmuel. That's just on a broad basis. Now, we're going to get into the details. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Amar Rav Chia. Lamata, lamata min harkuba, lamala, lamana min harkuba. When it says below, it means below the arkuba. When it says above, it means above the arkuba. And the reason that he's stating it this way is lafuke, the other position, which is the position of ula, where it's not going to be exactly like this. Then, be'eza arkuba amru. So then, which arkuba are we speaking about over here? Be'arkuba nimkeret imarosh. It's the arkuba that is sold with the rosh, which is the lowest bone. The bone all the way towards the bottom, which means that they're clearly speaking about the lower joint. The lower knee is the joint that it's speaking about. And what he's saying is that, whether you think the meaning of the word is arkuba, means the knee, or arkuba means the top of that lower bone, or you think it means the entire bone, what it's saying is that from the lower knee and downwards, if it breaks over there, or if it's cut over there, it's fine, the animal. Above that area, if it's cut, the animal is a treifa. Anywhere above that point means that anywhere on the middle bone, which is the shoke, or anywhere on the top bone of the erech, all of those will be treifot. From that point above will be considered to be a treifa. So that's the view of Amar Yehuda Marav, Amar Rabbi Chia, that we're speaking about the lower knee of the animal. On the other hand, we have the opposing opinion, which is Ula Amar Rabbi Shaya, Kignegdo begamal nikar. The joint or the knee that we're speaking about here is the knee or joint that is visible in the camel. So the camel, like the cow and any of the kosher animals, has the same construct of the three bones in the leg. The only difference is that the joints of the camel are more visible. And that has to do with the structure of the animal. So there's actually three opinions as to what is considered that which is nikar. So Rashi says over here that the place where the knee is visible, which in other animals is not visible. And that is because the camel has a joint that is visible. The upper joint, not just the lower joint, but the upper joint is visible. So that's Rashi's view over here. Because the body of the camel is much thinner. Whereas a cow's body is much thicker. So the body itself covers that joint in the cow. In the gamal, since its body tapers towards the back, it exposes that upper joint in the camel. And that is the one that is nikar in the gamal, which is not nikar in the cow or the kosher animals. And therefore, we're speaking about the upper joint, not the lower joint. That's the view of Rashi. Over here, the Rabbeinu Gershom gives an alternative view, which Rashi also in Bechorot gives the same view, which is that it's connected to the tail of the camel. Nikar b'gamal, besofs navo, at the end of its tail, shizanvo katsar, v'ene yocholot l'kapoto, and it doesn't cover over the knee. So if you look in the camel, camels have very short tails, and the short tail ends right by the area of the upper joint or the upper knee of the camel, as opposed to the cows, which have much longer tails that reach below that point. They actually cover up that joint. And that's what it means, nikar. Nikar in the gamal is because it's short tail. You can see that joint right there. The tail ends at the joint, whereas the cow's tail extends down beyond that joint of the animal. There is a third opinion as to what it means, which is brought by the Bartanura in his parish on the Mishnah, but it's also found in the parish of Rashbam, Ala Torah, Vayavrich et Agmalim, which is that when the animals are rovates, when they actually sit down, the camel sits down differently than a cow's. The camel sits down with its legs completely folded underneath it. That means that both its forelegs and its hind legs fold in a way that they're completely under the body of the camel. Then if you see cows that are down on the ground, their forelegs act in the same way, which is they're under their body, but their hind legs are usually sticking out to the side. They're not directly under their body when they sit down. They actually put them out. It's probably because of the same reason that Rashi's mentioning, which is that the camel, because its body is tapered towards the end, the upper knee has the ability to bend freely and therefore fit entirely under the body of the camel. Then for the cows, where that upper joint is subsumed or right up inside of their body, they can't fold it in a way that the legs will compress or compact under their body. They need to bend their legs and then extend them to the side to have them fold. So that's a third view as to what the difference is. All three of them are the same thing. There's no machloket over here as to what is being referenced to, but that is that this view believes that it's the upper joint that is the threshold and not the lower joint of the knee. Amar le Ula, the Rabbi Yehuda. So Ula now says to Rabbi Yehuda, Bishlam al-Didi, according to my explanation, Da'amina, that I say that the joint that the Mishnah is speaking about is connected by Gambal Nikar, is the joint in the gamel that is visible, Hainu Diktoni, that's why in the Mishnah it says, V'chein Nishin Nital Tzomet HaGidim. That's why it has to say in the Mishnah that taking of the Tzomet HaGidim is significant. That's because, for him, above the upper joint is a treifa. That means that the kulit or the yerech, anything cut along there is going to be a treifa. Below that upper joint, which is in the shok, that's already not going to be a treifa. That's going to be kasher. The tzomet hakidim, as we said before, is found at the bottom of the shok. It's at the area just above the lower knee. So now I have actually an area in the middle that is problematic, which is that above the upper knee, treifa. Below the upper knee is totally fine, except for the area of the Tzomet HaGidin. But that's why then the Mishnah has to specify the Tzomet HaGidin separately, because for me there's an area above it on the Shok that is Mutar, And then it becomes a sur again around the area of the Tzomet HaGidin. And then below that, again, it'll be kasher. It won't be a treifa. Ela lididach, my v'chein shnitel Tzomet HaGidin. But for you, how do we explain the fact that taking up the Tzomet HaGidin? For you, it's always a treifa when it is broken above that lower knee. And the Tzomet HaGidin is found above that lower knee. So by definition, if you break the bone up there, it's going to be a treifa. Why do you have to tell me if you cut the Tzomet HaGidin that it's going to be problematic? They're the same location, according to you. It's a duplication in the Mishnah. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Yehuda responds to Ula and says, the word that we have in our Gemara is Rekuba, but it seemingly is the same as the Arkuba that we've been discussing until now, which is Rekuba below Tzomet HaGidin, and Tzomet HaGidin below Rekuba. Mishnah is discussing two different scenarios. One scenario is a break in the bone when the Tzomet HaGidin is intact. And the other one's talking about that the Tzomet HaGidin was cut, but the bone is intact. And you could have two different issues. You could have an issue where the bone is broken above that lower knee, and that'll make it a treifa because of the bone, even though the Tzomet HaGidin is intact. Or, above that knee, the lower knee, if the bone's intact, but the Tzomet HaGidin is cut, that'll also be problematic. So he says, that's why the Mishnah has to speak about both. Ula responds from Yudin says, Baha nechtechu ketoni. Doesn't it say in the Mishnah that they were cut? And so, nechtechu seems to mean that it was cut all the way through. So that means that it was cut through the bone and the Tzomet HaGidin. And there's no separation between whether the bone's broken or the Tzomet HaGidin is broken. Sounds like here the thing was cut clearly through. Ishtik. Rabbi Yehuda had no response to that. The Bata Nenofak, after Ula left, Amar, my time lo amri le, lamato, lamata min arkuba, lamala, lamala mit Tzomet HaGidin. He says, I could have answered him the following, and then I would have solved all my problems. Which is that, when he says in the Mishnah, lamata min arkuba, means below the knee, the lower knee, that means literally below the lower knee. Below the lower knee is kasher if there's a break or a cut over there. When it says lamala, it doesn't mean above the arkuba. Lamala means above the Tzomet HaGidin. From above the Tzomet HaGidin and higher, that's a treifa. And then the Tzomet HaGidin would fill in that missing space, which says that even the area of the Tzomet HaGidin itself is also a treifa. He says to himself, why didn't I respond to him in that manner? Hadar Amar, he said back to himself now, Velo Amre Le, didn't I already give him an answer with regards to cutting the Tzomet HaGidin independently of the Etzem, or the Etzem independently of the Tzomet HaGidin? Vamar Li, and he responded to me, Nechtechu Ktani. The Mishnah says, Nechtechu, which means cut straight through. So he looked from the Lashona Mishnah, and it was Midayik against my position. Hachanami, if I give him that answer as well, Minar Kuba Ulamala Ktani. He's going to say, it doesn't say above the Tzomet HaGidin. It says it was cut above the Arkuba, whatever you think the Arkuba is. But it means that it's cut above the knee. It doesn't say that it's cut below the knee and then above the Tzomet HaGidin. It says below the knee and above the knee. And therefore, that explanation he would also have dismissed because the Lashona Mishnah is not Miduyak, like that view of Rabbi Yehuda. So now, Rav Papa Matni Hachi. Rav Papa, on the other hand, brought the memra of Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav Chia, in the following manner. Lamata, lamata min arkuba, umi Tzomet HaGidin. Lamata means below the knee, as well as below the Tzomet HaGidin. Lamala, that means lamala min arkuba umi Tzomet HaGidin. Means above the knee and above the Tzomet HaGidin. V'chein shnitel Tzomet HaGidin. And so too, the Tzomet HaGidin is problematic. V'arkuba gufa kidul amar belshaya. And which arkuba are we speaking about now? We're speaking about the upper knee. So now, this view of Rav Papa, in the name of Rav Yehuda Marav Amar Bichia, is similar to the view of Ula Amar Boshaya. He just expresses it slightly differently about what is the malo and the mata. Over there, he says that the mata, the arkuba that we're speaking about, is the upper knee, but the mata means the mata min hatzomet hagidim uber arkuba, which means the area which for sure is kshera, which is lower knee, and below is absolutely fine. Above the arkuba means above the upper knee, which is the area of the erech of the kolik, the upper bone. That's a treifa. The shok is actually a mix. The shok is some parts of it are okay, some parts of it are not okay. The upper part of the shok is actually kasher if it gets cracked there. The lower part of the shok is keneged the gidim, the tzomet hagidim. In that area, if there's a break or a cut across, it'll be a treifa. So in essence, he's saying the same thing as Ula Amar Rabbi Hoshaya. He just explains that Darkuba Lamata, not to mean directly below the upper knee, like Rabbi Hoshaya said, that directly below the upper knee is kasher, with the exception of the Tzomet HaGidin. He just says, Lamata min Arkoba means in the area where it's absolutely clear that it's fine, that's only below the lower knee, or the lower joint, that's the area that is kasher. Above that point, to the upper knee, there's half of it is okay, half of it's not okay. First part of the mission discussed areas that are clearly treifa, that's above the higher knee. Those areas that are clearly Torah, that's below the lower knee. In between the lower knee and the upper knee, which is the shok over there, v'chein shnita tzomet hagidin. That's what defines. If the tzomet hagidin is problematic there, it's problematic. If it's above the area where the tzomet hagidin is, then it's not problematic. Now, on that shita, the Gemara says, umi ika mide, dilum madle, pasikle v'chayo. Is there such a thing that if you went up higher on the animal and you cut it, it actually be kasher? And then if you go down further, it would be meta, it'd be a treifa. So you actually have something that seems counterintuitive over here, which is that when you cut up higher on the bone, it actually is not a treifa, it's a kshera. When you cut higher on the shok, that's fine. When you cut lower on the shok, you're at the area of the tzom and the gidin, it's going to be a treifa. So how could it be that when you cut higher up, it's kasher, and when you cut lower down, it actually becomes a treifa? Amar Rav Ashi, not to worry about that. Treifot kamedame tahadodi? You're trying to compare treifot? Ain't omrim be treifot, zo dome lezo. By treifot, we don't say this one's similar to that, so therefore the din should be that way. Sharei chutcha mikan umeta, chutcha mikan vechaya. You cut it over there and it dies, and you cut it over there and it does live. So now, he seems to be directing this at the story over here, which is the shok. We saw earlier in the Gemara that there are other instances of that, like by the Torbetz HaVeshet, where also the din is different when it's higher up than when it's lower down on the esophagus itself, where one of them might be a mashu, one of them may need a rove. So you see that there are differences, and therefore you can't just extrapolate from one to the other. And even though it seems counterintuitive, it actually is that way. If you cut up higher on the leg, if you sever over there, it's going to be fine. When you cut lower down, but it's somebody get in, it's going to be problematic. Now, the Ramban goes ahead and says, based on that, that if the animal's leg was cut at the area of the Tzomet HaGidin, which means right above the lower knee, which according to everyone is the treifa, if you just move further up the bone and cut it again, then the animal will no longer be a treifa. Because if you cut it at the area of the Tzomet HaGidin, that is caused to be a treifa. So all you have to do is cut a little higher up, and then it won't be. So if you just cut again higher up, you can actually change the animal's status from being a treifa to a non-treifa. The Rashba and many of the other Rishonim disagree with this view of the Ramban and say, once a treifa, always a treifa. Which means that if you cut the Tzomet HaGidin, the animal's nekdarka treifa, cutting it above that area at this point is not going to change that. You can't reverse the status of treifa. So yes, if you had originally cut it above that area, it wouldn't have been a treifa. But once you've cut it at the Tzomet HaGidin, it's already has a shame treifa. And now if you cut it up higher, you can't remove that shame treifa from the animal. So now, that's the first part of the Mishnah, which is, what is the Arkuba that we're speaking about? Between the two versions that are brought, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shem Rabbi Chia, as to whether it's a reference to the lower knee, or to the upper knee, and we saw that Ula Amar Rabbi Hoshaya also believes, like Rabbi Papa's version of Amar Yehuda and Rabbi Shem Rabbi Chia, that it is the upper knee, that is the Arkuba. And that's how we would read the Mishnah based on it. Now, the Gemara wants to know that the last part of that section says Tzomet HaGidin. And the Gemara wants to know the following information, Ve'eluhein Tzomet HaGidin. What is the Tzomet HaGidin? This place or this location is essential because if you cut the Tzomet HaGidin, then the animal is automatically a treifa. So you need to identify for us where is the Tzomet HaGidin so we know that when you cut there, you actually make the animal into a treifa. So there are three opinions over here. The first of which is Rabba Amar Rav Ashi or Amar Rav Asi, depending on what girsa you have over here. And obviously, if it is Rav Ashi, it's got to be an earlier Rav Ashi than the standard Rav Ashi in the Shas, because that Rav Ashi was born the day that Rava died. So he wouldn't have had anything to say in the name of Rav Ashi, so it must have been a Rav Ashi at Kadmon, as the Masorah Shas notes over here. The Agroma Ulebar. Now, Agroma in Aramaic means the bone. Ulebar means to the outside. So we'll do this first with Rashi's interpretation, and then we'll come back and give the alternate explanations over here. Rashi says the Hagram or Labar means that from the bone and upwards. So now the reference over here in terms of which bone that we're speaking about, Rashi says, Mishiyotzima gidim mina etzem. When the gidim, the tendons, leave the area of the bone, umilachim babasar, sha etzem lamala mina perek, arum. So, and they go above the area of the bone, above the joint, arum below basar. They're there without any flesh around them. Ukishtaim gimel etzbot, or two or three fingers' breadths from there, hagidimo dukimbo. They are attached or very tightly close to the bone. Mimakom shemit parshimi menu ulamala. From the point that they leave the bone, matchil, that's when it starts, close machim smutim, as long as they're still tightly packed, ukshurim, and together, shlosha yachad, the three gidim, which we noted before, that so many gidim is comprised of three gidim, ad makom shemit pashtim patzim zemizeh, to the point where they start to split up. So what Rashi says is, if you look at the anatomy of the animal, you'll see that the gidim follow along, really from the hoof, that's where they start, they come up all the way up the arkuba and imkereti marosh, and then they start to split up a little bit, but they're still riding on the bones itself. And then at the point where the bone, there's actually a bone that is protruding backwards in the knee of the first knee or the lower knee of the animal. Once you clear that threshold of that bone, at that point, the gidim start to be then move away from the bone and then be enveloped in the basar, in the flesh of the animal, until they go up to a point where they then break up or they widen out into many, many different pieces. So you can see this in the pictures that we have here, that there's these three tendons that go up. So from the point above the area of the bone, that's considered to be the agroma ulebar. From the bone and outwards, that's what was classified as the Tzomet HaGidin, according to this view of Rabba Amar Rav Ashi. Rabba Bar Rav Huna Amar Rav Ashi, or again Rav Asi, the agroma ulegav. From that same location, that same threshold, but the gav means towards the inner side, towards the side of the bone. So the top of the Tzomet HaGidim is equivalent to the beginning of the Tzomet HaGidim from the previous opinion. And the beginning of it is down towards the beginning of the berech, the beginning of that joint. That's what's classified as the agroma ulegav. So here you have this threshold of the bone, that bone, which likely is that bone that protrudes backwards from the joint of the knee. For the first opinion, Rabba's opinion, it's from that bone up to the point where it starts to break apart. It's no longer really like a tendon, but it opens up into a much thicker and stringier consistency to it. That's the area that's considered to be the Tzomet HaGidin. And according to the second opinion, which is Rabba by Rav Huna's opinion, and the name of Rabashi Ravasi, is from that bone down towards the bottom of the knee. That's the area that's considered to be the Tzomet HaGidin. That's Rashi's view. Rashi's view is that they have mutually exclusive positions, which is their threshold is the same. The question between them, or what they're arguing about, is whether the threshold is the beginning of the Tzomet HaGidin, or is it the end of the Tzomet HaGidim? According to one who says the Labar, it's the beginning of the Tzomet HaGidim, it goes above that area. The one who says the Gav, it's from that area downwards, down towards the bottom of the knee, that is considered to be the area of the Tzomet HaGidim. The Rosh, on the other hand, argues on Rashi and says that they are cumulative rather than mutually exclusive, which means that every opinion that we're going to say here adds more than the first opinion. So according to the Rosh's view, the first opinion is that that threshold of the bone upwards, that's agroma labar. When he comes and says agroma lagav, he doesn't mean exclusively agroma lagav, he means in addition to the agroma labar, also the agroma lagav. So not only does he think that the area of Rabba is considered to be the Tzomet HaGidim, Rabba Bar Rav Huna thinks that it's also the area below that threshold. So from that threshold and up, everybody agrees the Tzomet HaGidim. Rabba Bar Rav Huna adds on that even below that threshold is also considered to be the Tzomet HaGidim. And then we have the third opinion, which is Rova, great the Rabba Bar Rav Huna Amar, Rav Asi, or Rav Ashi, depending on what you think the gear says, Dilave Arkuma, from above the Arkuma. And this is what I discussed before in the introduction, that there are six bones in the knee, and the Arkuma is one of those six bones. There are numerous opinions as to whether the bone is the one that sits right above Arkuma and Imkemerti Marosh, there's a bone or a small bone that sits right on top of it, the etzem katan, that connects the prakim, the joint itself. That's what Rashi suggests over here. The other possibilities are that they are bones in the middle of the knee. And then the other possibility is that they are bones further up in the joint, or possibly that bone that protrudes backwards in the leg. So you have numerous opinions into what the arkuma is. And now he's suggesting that from that arkuma and upwards is considered to be the tzomet agidin. Now for the Rosh, that means that he's cumulative. That means that he includes the first opinion of agrama ulabar, the second opinion of agrama ulagav, and then a third opinion, which is the ilavei, the arkum, above the arkum. And the Rosh in the Tshuva says that the difference between the opinion of agrama ulagav and the opinion of ilavei arkuma, above the arkuma, is a tiny bit. It's a very small addition over there. It's like kechuta sahara. It's a small addition that he is making. According to, again, for Rashi over here, when he explains that it's the lilavei or kuma, he says, etzem akatana mechaberta prakim, that small bone that connects the joint, which again, according to Rashi, it seems like it's the very small bone that sits right above the lower arkuba, anim kerati marosh, that first big bone right above it, beginning of the knee, there's a small bone there, that's what it is. From there, all the way to the point where it splits apart, that's considered to be the Tzomet Egidim. So it's clear, according to Rashi, similar to the Rosh, that the final opinion here includes all the other two opinions. So according to Rashi, the first two are mutually exclusive. The third opinion is cumulative, meaning it includes the first two opinions, plus a little more than that. According to the Rosh, each successive opinion is cumulatively more. First opinion is Agrum Aluchut. The second opinion is Agrum Aluchut plus Agrum Aligav. Then the third opinion is Ilave Arkuma, which is similar to Rashi, which is that it includes anything all the way up to the point that Mitpashtim. So those are the three opinions that you have here with regards to the Tzomet Hagidin. Now, there was one of these Rabbonon, was sitting in front of Rabbi Abba, and he was saying, the Arkuma Gufa, that not only is the Tzomet Hagidin above Ilave, the Arkuma, but even at the Arkuma itself, that Gidim at that point are also a part of the Tzomet Gidim. Amalei Rabbi Abba, lo tatzitule. Rabbi Abba says, don't listen to him. Hakamei Rabbi Yehuda, heche de pare tabche. It's the area where the tabachim begin to be para. Rashi over here suggests that there are two explanations of this. And the Gemara says about this, behainu rova brei de rabba baravuna. It is equivalent to the position of Rava Brei de Rava Ravuna, which means Ilavei Arkuma. So wherever this point is synonymous with the third opinion that we brought in terms of where the Tzomet HaGidim begins. So Rashi over here gives two opinions as to what it means, Pare Tabche. One is, Makom Shepotchim HaTabachim Lafrish HaBatzar Min Etzem. It's the point at which the butchers start to take the meat off the bone. When they're peeling the meat off the bone, that's the part where they start. That's the location that we're speaking about. Kishim and Akrimoto. When they want to take out the tzinkaron. So the tzinkaron, it's not clear what Rashi is referencing to it. But at that point, that's the area where they start to take the meat or the flesh off of the bone. Which he says is equivalent to Milavei Arkuma. Lishna Akrino, the second possibility is Kishim Afshitina Behema. When they flay the animal, Misham Matchilim Liftoach. That's where they start the flaying process. That's where they start to take off or flay the skin of the animal. So Rashi gives two interpretations which he says are the same. The same area where they begin to flay, it's also the area where they're going to begin to take the basar off of the bone, and how they can take out minakrim. They can clean out or take off the sinews that are there, or the gidima that are there. Now the minakrim has a very loaded term, because minakrim or nikur, we're going to see later on in the Masechta, that has to do with the gida nasheh. But the Gidon HaSheh is way up higher on the hip. Now even though the Gidon HaSheh gets down there, that area that's down there does not have to be removed. So Rashi is not speaking about Nikur from the halachic sense of Nikur, that you have to pull them out because they're not Sherim. He's speaking about it from a perspective of what they wanted from the meat. They wanted to make it better meat, or to clear these out of the meat. So the Nikur here is not of a halachic type, but rather because of the way that the Tabachim wanted to cut the meat, or the pieces of meat they wanted to get from there, that they were better if they took them out or they were menaker them. The Ra'ivid on the other hand gives the explanation as being where they hang the animal from when they are going to flay it. It probably is all in concert with what Rashi is saying over here, because the point where you hang it from is the point where you can start flaying from. It's also the point from which you can start cutting the basar off of the bone, because above that point, then you would sever it from where it's hanging. So the shloshet gidim that are there, one of them is much thicker than the other two gidim. And what he says is that you can hook the animal up between the bone and that tendon, that large tendon, which is one of the gidim, the three gidim that we're speaking about, the hook can fit in there. And if you look, when you hook it up like that, that area where you hook it up is right above the arkuma. That's right above that lowest bone of the knee. That's where it comes out, because that's where the tendon breaks away from these bones, and that gives you an area where you can hook it up. So if you see that the arkuma is over here, then that area is a place where there is an ability to hang the animal up or hook it up between the arkuma and the gidim that are behind it. And that's the same area. Again, all of these are just ways to identify the same location as to where the Tzomet HaGidin begins. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Tzomet HaGidim Shamru, Makom Shagidim Tzomtim. It's the area where the Gidim are Tzomtim, means they are tied tightly, they're tightly packed or grouped together, Ve'ad Kamo, and then how far does that go? Amar Lo Amar Rav Bonon, V'Rav Yaakov Shmei, Ki Avine Be'i Rav Yehuda, Amarlan, Shamu Mini Milta Dmigabur Rabo. When I was at the house of Rabbi Yehuda, he says, listen to me, I want to tell you over something that I heard from a great person, Umanu Shmuel. And it's a reference to Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda learned by Rab and by Shmuel. So he's saying, I have something to tell you over from Shmuel. Tzomet HaGidim Shamru, Makom Shagidim Tzomtim Bo. It's the area where the Gidim are tightly packed together. Makom Shetzomtim Ad Makom Shemitpashtim. From that point where they are tightly together, until the point that they split up or they start to break apart. So now, Rashi over here says, Somtim mechuberim yachtav, that they are attached together, v'nirim kegid echad, and they look like one gid instead of three gidim. This leads to the machloket in the Shita of Rashi as to what he's referencing to. So the way that we've been speaking about it until now is that there is a tendon that rises from the heel of the animal. The truth is, from the moment it rises, it's already three tendons that are rising. They stay close together, tightly packed together, until they reach the arkuma. At the point of the arkuma, they start to spread apart, with the larger of the tendon moving towards the back, and the two smaller tendons moving towards the middle or the front of the animal. So what you could, and this is the way that many interpret Rashi, is that not literally that they are one, but rather nirim ke'achad. They look like one. And since they look like one, even though they're already three from the point of the heel, they're still considered to be one or look like one until they actually start to split apart. And therefore the three tendons we're speaking about here is this one big thick tendon that goes behind and the two thinner ones that move up. Again, this has become important in the Gemara, one thing thick and thin, because the Gemara is going to give the Gidim described in this manner. That's one way to view Rashi. There is an alternate view within Rashi, and that is that the Tzomet HaGidin is based on that larger gid that runs behind the knee. That larger gid, as it grows up higher, actually breaks apart into three gidim, three separate gidim. And then later on, like the other gidim, eventually gets to a point where it reaches the muscles and opens up into a much wider part. So the other suggestion in Rashi is that it's referencing to that larger gid, which literally is a single gid until it clears over the bones and then it starts to break up. Now, even though it breaks up into three much higher up, still below that point, it's already started to split into threes, and it still looks like one at that point. It's not visible that you can see that it's three earlier on. But that's the other position as to what the Shloshet HaGidim is. There is a third opinion, which is the view of the Ra'ivid, and the Ra'ivid makes a suggestion based on the Gemara that we just saw, which is that we said Agruma Labar and Agruma Lagav means, Agruma Labar means from the bone and up the leg. Agama the Gav means from that bone down the leg. But what he suggests is Gav and Bar is anterior and posterior, which is that the Mila Gav means towards the front of the animal. Mila Bar means towards the back of the animal. And he says there are actually two sets of three Gidim. There's a set of three Gidim that runs behind, which is like Rashi's view over there. Those three that are running behind the leg. Those are the Tumei Negidim according to one who says Agroma Ulebar. According to the one who says that it is Agroma Legav, he's referencing to three Gidim that run up the front of the leg. They're much thinner ones, but they run up the front of the leg, and that's the reference of the Agroma Ulegav. And therefore, for him, the Tumei Negidim actually has two different locations, one in front, one in the back. And the one who says Marakuma Alamalo is including both of those. He's including both the ones in the front and in the back. And again, there'll be a point where they are more together, and then a point where they split apart. And that'd be what is being defined over here. Question is, Vikama, how long is that location? I mean, you're telling me it's from the part where they are together, and then they start to move apart until they reach the point where they really split apart. So that, how far is that, or how long is that area of the Tzomet HaGidim? So Amrabai, Arba Bate Bitorah. It is four bate in a Torah, in a shore which is a much bigger animal. Bedakamai, in a thinner animal, what's the din? And we'll get to this in 1 second. But the shore is arba bate. Rashi over here says, arba bate are arba etzbaot. The word bate, or the Oruch's version of the word is batre, are considered to be four etzbaot. It means 4 fingers worth. Whether that means you measure your thumb 4 times, or does it mean you take the 4 fingers besides the thumb and you measure it? That would be the area that is considered the 4 etzbaot, where the Tzomet HaGidin is. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that bate does not mean etzba, but bate is the equivalent of 4 etzbaot. So 4 bate would be 16 etzbaot. It's 4 times 4 etzbaot, which would be 16 etzbaot. The problem with both opinions brought by the Rosh is he says that empirical evidence seems to indicate that both of them are incorrect. Rashi's is too small, and the Rambam's is too big. Because if you measure from Ilavei Arkuma, the point where the Tzomet, the Gidim start to split apart, you measure 16 etzvot, you're already going to be up towards past the Shok. You're going to be up in towards the upper knee already. And we already said that the Tzomet Gidim is only for part of the Shok. It's not the entirety of the Shok. So it's too far. For Rashi, who says 4 etzvot, if you start Ilavei Arkuma, and then you move up 4 etzbaot, you're going to end somewhere in the middle of the Gidim before they start to really widen up at the top. So it seems to be too short an area. That's part of the problem is, it doesn't seem to be that either of them are working out. There is a other view in the position of the Rambam, which actually works out and comes up with the answer that we're looking for over here, which is that if you count the 16 etzbaot, not milavei arkuma, from above that bone, but rather from the heel, where the Gidim begin, the Malam in Akev, above the area of the heel, the 16 etzvot actually land perfectly, almost, on the area where the Gidim start to open up very wide, and that would be the end of the area. So the Rambam, based on the explanation of the Chatzim Sofer, and the Mesoret from Teiman, and there's others that have brought such suggestions, makes the point that the Rambam's measurement is actually not from the Ilavei Arkuma, but actually from the Akev, even though the Tzomet HaGidim doesn't begin there, but that's where the Gidim begin. If you count the Nerev 16 etzvot, you'll actually get to the location where it ends. And that actually would then be something that matches up with the empirical evidence that we have. So now, Gemara asks, B'daka mai, in a smaller animal, how do you tell how long or where the area of the Tzomet HaGidim is? So, Amar Abaye, Blite Avei Tzomet HaGidim, Blie Lo Avei Tzomet HaGidim. The first thing is, if they are blite, extending out, they are clearly visible on the flesh. They're not subsumed in the flesh. They are outside the flesh. But later on, as we saw up here, they start to move into areas of very large flesh. They're no longer visible anymore, identifiable separately. Below that area, they're clearly, if you cut the leg at that point and peel off the skin, they're clearly visible separate from the basar, the flesh. There's very little flesh over there, in truth. The lower you get down, the less flesh there is on the leg, and therefore they're going to be more visible. As you climb the leg, they're going to be less visible. So that's one identifying factor. Ashune havei tzomet hagidim, rikichei lo havei tzomet hagidim. If they are hard, that is the tzomet hagidim. If they are soft, that is not the tzomet hagidim. So again, the tendons lower down are much harder, much stronger. As they rise and move into the basar, they're going to become softer and softer to the point where they're very soft that they actually can't be differentiated from the basar. Not only by appearance, but even in consistency, they are similar to the basar itself. That's why lower down, you have to be menaker. That's what Rashi was saying. You have to peel out the gidim because they're too hard to eat. Whereas when they get higher up, they become much softer. You can eat them with a basar without any problem. You don't need to even not care them. You don't need to take them out. The next threshold is alime aveit tzomet agidin. If they are thick, then they're considered to be tzomet agidin. Kitine, if they are thin, lo aveit tzomet agidin. It's no longer the tzomet agidin. So again, here, this is what influences some to say within Rashi, that when you're talking about the thick one versus the thin ones, well, the truth is that according to Rashi's interpretation, there's one thick one and two thin ones that we're speaking about here. We're going to see in a second that that is true. But it also seems to be that the area where it's thick is where it's problematic. When it becomes thinner, it's not problematic. According to the second view in Rashi, there was really that thick tendon that later on breaks into three. That would make a lot of sense because you have an area which is very thick. Then it becomes slightly thinner until the point where it becomes very thin. But again, you could say it even according to the first version of Rashi as well, which is that the gidim, no matter how thick they start out, they start to narrow and become thinner as you move up. That's the third way to tell. The fourth way to tell is chivare. If they are white, haveit tzomet agidin. Lo chivare, if they're not white, then they are considered not to be the tzomet agidin. So again here, the thicker they are, the harder they are, the whiter they are, the more visible they are. All of them come hand in hand. Those areas are considered to be the tzomet agidin. As it thins, as it softens, and as it loses its color, they become less visible, and that's the area that is not the tzomet agidin. So here it gives you all these different ways to determine what is considered part of the tzomet agidin and what's not considered to be part of the tzomet agidin based on these character traits. Because dakol, first of all, are different sizes and different shapes, it's much harder to give an exact measurement. By a tor, by a shor, it seems to be that they were much more fixed in their measurements, and therefore they could give an absolute measurement, an objective measurement, to determine how far it up it is versus a behemat dakah. The truth is that by a shor, the same would be true, meaning that the same qualifications that you have by the dakah would be true by the shor as well, because there you can measure it and know without having to worry about it. Now, Amar, Mar, Bar Ravashi Amar, Kaven de Zige, once they become Zige, Apagav de Lochivare, even though they're no longer white. Rashi said, Fulim, transparent, clears, Livanim Kitzat. They are clear, but slightly white. The way that we said it before was that the chivare, when it's white, it's the tzomet agidim. Lo chivare, if they're not white, then it's not the tzomet agidim. Marbar Vashi says transition point is between being white towards being, I would call it pale, or somewhat transparent. You don't have to look for white and not white, but it's rather from the change from a deep white to a more transparent or pale white. Meaning that even as it starts to turn reddish or less white, it still is considered to be part of the tzomet agidim until it turns fully red. Even when it's palish or somewhat clear, that's still white enough to be classified as part of the gidin or tzomet agidim. Now, Rashi says over here, Umar bar Ravashi, kaimalan b'chol duchte bar mitarte. We pass on like Mar bar Ravashi everywhere in Shas, with the exception of two places. And therefore, since Mar bar Ravashi over here spoke, he should be the halacha over here. And that's what Rashi suggests. Ubashir tzomet agidim, and the area of the tzomet agidim. Since we have a machloket, since we don't know who the Gemara Paskin's like, we'll go in a din Torah, you go after the one who's machmir, the treifo doraita. Hilkach. Therefore, the area of the tzomet agidim is going to be milavei arkuma, which was the longest opinion, meaning from the lowest part of the leg, which was milavei arkuma, both according to the Rosh and Rashi. That was the one who had the largest opinion, which seems to be from the tuber calcis in the knee, upwards, until the place that they start to split apart. Kol makom shelotech sham, anywhere you cut along that continuum, avit tzomet agidim. Even if the bone itself is still there, meaning that the knee, the etzem kayam, and the bone itself is there, whether it's the shoke that's there, and the knee, all the bones are intact, it's still a treifa, because we said that even if the tzomet agidim is cut without the bone, then it's still considered to be problematic. According to that one opinion of Rav Yehuda Merav, even without the bone being broken, just cutting the tzomet agidim in it itself is problematic. So we're going to be machmir in all the cases. We're machmir like the largest opinion of what is considered to be tzomet agidim. That means mearkuma, lamala, all the way to the part where it really splits apart. Number two is we're going to be machmir for the fact that if you just cut that area, it will be problematic, even if the bones are intact. And then the third thing is that for Behemoth Daka, Marba Ravashi governs over here, even in the area where it starts to become white. It's not fully white. That would be the Tzomet Tagidin. So it doesn't have to be pure white. As long as it starts to look whitish or palish, that's already considered to be part of the area with the Tzomet Tagidin. And Rashi says the luck is like Marba Ravashi. Tosafot disagrees with that one point of Rashi, which is Perisha Kuntres that we paskin like Marba Ravashi. He says, V'chein yesh b'seder tanaim u'morim. And what Rashi is saying, we have in other Sparim that tell us the same thing. Rabbeinu Chananel perish. But the Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, says, the kaimelan kavadei b'chol b'duchtin, bar me'mebach shvua v'chivore. His gersa is that we pass him like him in everything besides me'bach shvua, which is a din in the Gemara Shvuot, about flipping the shvua, who we flip it to, when both parties are suspect, v'chivore, and white. This siman kulo hafach lavan v'chivari haynu hachdishmaitin. That is the one that's found in our Gemara over here. V'chein perish Rabbeinu Tam, and Rabbeinu Tam says the same thing. So they have the same mistor as Rashi. The halacha is always like Marba Ravashi. The problem is that their two exceptions are different than Rashi's two exceptions. Rashi's two exceptions are Mepach Shvua and Michtav Odita, which is found in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and Mepach Shvua. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel and Rabbeinu Tam's version of this is, the halach is like him in every case except Mepach Shvua and Chivare. And Chivare is our case over here. And there the halach is not like Bar Ravashi over here. Rashi, in addition, says with regards to the Arkuba, Rashi says over here that the halach is, as I explain now, we're going to follow the first Lashon of Rav, the Chumrah, because that's the most machmir of the three opinions that we brought. We brought Rav's original opinion, then we brought Ula Amar Rabu Shaya, and then the second opinion of Rav in the name of Rabbi Chiya, which was similar to Ula Amar Rabu Shaya with slight variances of Diuk Lashon between them. But he says, since we don't know who the Loch is like, we're going to be Machmir Lelishta Kama the Rav of Din the Chumra Ula Malam Yarkoba Tachtona. Any cut above the lower knee, Koma Kom Shiachtoch Trefa. Anywhere you cut, it's going to be considered a Trefa. V'chein Nital Tzoma Tagudim below Rekuva. Even if the Tzoma Tagudim is taken out without the bone, the Lo Chazin and the Hadar Bei Rav, because we never saw that Rav changed his mind about that, or changed his opinion. And later on, we're going to pass in that way, even with the bone just broken, independent, and clearly if you cut all the way through, it's definitely going to be a problem. So Rashi says, in all these situations, we're passing in the Chumrah, which means that anything above the lower knee is going to be problematic. That's whether the bone is broken, or the Tzomet HaGidim is cut above that area. And then the Tzomet HaGidim, we're also going to be Machmir, which is going to go with the opinion that the largest area of what the Tzomet HaGidim is. So that's Rashi's view as to what the Loch is here. So now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Meimar Mishmei D'Rav Zvid, Tzlata Chutei Habu. There are three of these Chutim, which are the Tzomet HaGidim. So that, first of all, is why we're always speaking about three over here. That's number one. Chad Alima Utrei Ktina. One of them is very thick, and the other two are thinner. That's again what leads to the mainstream opinion in Rashi as to what the three tendons are that are coming up the back, because one of them is thicker and the other two are thinner, rather than being that one thick one that breaks into three thinner ones, of one of which is a little thicker than the other two. Here it's very obvious that there's one very thick one and two thinner ones, and that's the view of Rashi that we saw originally. Ifsek Alima, if the largest one, the thickest one is cut, Azaro Binyan, then you've lost the majority of the structural frame of the animal. Ifsik Tine, if the smaller ones are cut, Azaro Binyan, then you've lost the majority of the count. So here you have three tendons. So if two of the tendons are gone, then you've lost the Rov Binyan, the majority of tendons. If the largest of the tendons is cut, then you've lost Rov Binyan, the structural strength of the animal. And therefore, in any one of those scenarios, it's going to be a trefa. Even if you don't cut through the entirety of the Tzomet HaGidim, the three Gidim, if you just cut all the way through the thick one, or you cut through the two thin ones, both of those in and themselves makes it into a trefa, according to this. Marba Ravashi Matni Lekula. He learns it the Kula. If sick, Alima. If the big one is cut, Taika Rov Minyan. So even though the larger one's cut and you don't have Rov Binyan, you're still left with Rov Binyan. The majority of the Gidin are still there. And if Siktine, if the two thinner ones are cut, then Ika Rov Binyan. Even though the Rov Binyan is gone, the thicker one is still intact. It means structurally, the thickest one is still there and in place, and therefore it should be kasher. So Mar Rav Ashi argues on that point. Be'ofot, when it comes to birds, Shitzar Chutei Avu. There are 16 of these gidin. Ipasek Chad Menayu Trefa. If any one of them is cut, it is a problem. And now, the way that Tosfot says is the reason that if any one of them is cut, it's problematic is because once one is cut, the others will break very easily. Or the way that others express it is that by the oaf, which does not have as strong a life force or strength of structure, then the chutin that are there, the larger number of chutin, which are very thin, if any one of them is cut, that already causes the animal to be a trefa, as opposed to the behemoth, which has a much stronger structural frame and thicker tendons, thicker gidim, there you need to cut through, according to this, all three of them, or at least through the one big one and one thin one, according to Mar by Rav Ashi, in order for it to be a trefa. So Amar Mar by Rav Ashi, Havakaimna Kamei Da'abo, I was in front of my father meeting Rav Ashi, Vaitu the Kamei Ofa, brought the bird, Bodok Vashkoch Bei Chamistar, he found 15 of these gidim in the leg of the oaf. Hava chad David shani michabrei. One of those gidim looked a little different than its other counterparts. Very thick, naftse. So he either spread it apart, he quote unquote exploded it, or combed it, or moved it between his fingers. And vashkach trei, and he saw it was really comprised of two gidim. So it was actually two gidin comprised into one. They were tightened together. But when you moved it around, you were able to separate it out and see that it was actually another gid. And therefore he got to the 16 that he was looking for. And he was matir the animal. Now Rashi says that the loch here is like Mar Bar Rav Ashi. Mar Bar Rav Ashi appeared in the first case of Kevin to Zige, that piece. As well as over here where he says, Matni Lukula, that if Sikalima, if the big one is broken but the other two are intact, you're fine. Or if the two smaller ones are cut but the big one's intact, then you're also fine over here. As well as the fact that he brings the case by his father, that by the bird you require 16 gidim. And even if you find 15, you have to check that one of them isn't very thick and it's actually comprised of two gidim in order to get the 16. Rashi says that the locha is like Mar Bar Rav Ashi throughout Shas, with the exception of two cases, and this is not one of these two cases. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, some of the gidim shamru birubo, that some of the gidim that we're speaking about that is problematic is when it's cut birubo in its majority. My rubo. What does that mean? So the first opinion is rov echad mehem. If any one of them has the rov that is cut from it, that is enough to make it into a trefa. Ki amrita kameh Shmuel, when they said over this in front of Shmuel, meaning Rabbi Yehuda, who learned by Rav, said this over by Shmuel, amrlei michte, tzlata havu. There are three gidim over here. Ki mitsa chad menayu legamrei, if one of them is cut entirely, haika trei, there's still two left over. So why would you say that rove of one of them is enough to make it into a trefa? Even if one of them is severed completely, it shouldn't be a trefa because the other two are still intact. Time of the ika trei. Now, according to Shmuel, that's only because two are still intact. Haleka trei, if two of them were cut, meaning there was only one left, lo, then it would be a trefa even according to Shmuel. Upliga de Rabbanai. And that argues on Rabbanai. Dama Rabbanai arma Shmuel. They have a different view in Shmuel. Even if all that is left there is a chuta sarbal, it is kshera. Now chuta sarbal, sarbal is like a cloak, and as Rashi says over here, I would call it the equivalent maybe of a cape. And when you have a cape, you need to tie it in the front to hold the cape on. It doesn't have a neck that surrounds all the way around to create the area of the collar. You tie it in the front. That string that's used for tying is called the chuta sarbal. And it seems to be that it's a very thin type of string that's used over there. Although, the Beit Yosef says that it's actually a thicker type of string. But either way, what it means is that as long as you have a chuta sarbal that's left in any one of them, that's enough to make it kasher. So according to the Rabbanai, they're the most makil, which is that they believe that if two of them are cut and one remains, with enough of the chudash about left with it is kosher. Shmuel says that you need at least two that are intact in order for it to be considered to be kosher. And Rav says that you need two intact, plus the third one has to be, the robe of it is still intact in order for it to be kosher. So those are the three opinions. Ikan de Amre, there is another version of this. My rubo, what is the robe? Robe kol echad ve'echad. Means that you have to have the majority of each one of them intact. And that means that you have to have, each one of them can be cut partially, but the robe of that one must be intact in order for it to be kosher. Gamrita kamei Shmuel and reviewed the sentence in front of Shmuel. Amrali michte tlata havel. There are three of them. Haika tilta to chol chad v'chad. Even if the robe of each one of them is cut, you have the remaining third that is still intact, and therefore it would be kasher. And mesayale l'rabbanai, and that is helped by that position of the rabbanai now. Damar rabbanai amar Shmuel. So metegidim shamru. Afilo lo nishte'er ba el kachutas sarbal k'shera. Even if only like a kachutas sarbal is left, that's enough to make it kasher. Now over here, you might have to alter the girsa for it to be more in line with what Shmuel says. Because before, it was lo nishte'er ba el kachutas sarbal, which means that even if there was just a single kachutas sarbal that's left. Over here, it seems like the way the Gemara is reading Rabbanai means there's a chutas sarbal left on each one of the gidin, then it's okay, because then it would be similar to what Shmuel says. Shmuel says there's a third of each one left, and therefore it's okay. So in order for the Rabbanai to align with that, you would have to say, shafilo nishtar bahen ella b'chutas sarbal shera, or each one of them, a chutas sarbal left in it, then that's kasher. Right now, the Gemara is moving on in the Mishnah, which is Nishbar Ha'etzem. If the bone is broken. So Amar Rav, Rav says, the Malam in Arkuba, if the bone is broken above the Arkuba, Imrova Basar Kayam, Zeb Zeb Mutar. If the majority of Basar is intact, Zeb Zeb Mutar means that both the limb and the animal itself is Mutar. Vim Lav, if that's not the case, Zeb Zeb Asur, that both the limb and the animal are sur. I mean, it's a trefa, and the aver itself is also, of course, problematic. Over here, it's considered to be detached. Lamata min arkuba, if you're below the knee, then imroba basar kayam, if the majority of the basar is there, zeb zeb mutar. They are both mutarim, meaning that both the aver and the animal. Imlav, if there's not roba basar there, Aver asur ubeimat muteret. Then the aver is problematic. It's considered as if severed. And the beimah is considered to be mutar. That it's considered not to be a trefa. And therefore in the Mishnah, when it says, nishbar etzem, imroba basar kayam, shchitato mitaharato, beimlav ein shchitato mitaharato, which makes it sound like the aver is problematic, but the beimah is okay. According to Rav, that's in the case of lamata min arkuba. That's an area below the Arkuba. So according to Rav, the bone broken below the Arkuba is never going to make the Bema into a Trefa. Just a question if the limb itself will be problematic or the limb itself will be also Kasher. If Rova Basar is there, then the limb is considered to be attached. It's Mutar Ayidei, the Shechita of the animal. On the other hand, if there's no Rova Basar, the animal itself is not a Trefa, but the limb is considered detached. And when you shecht it, it's as if it detaches from the animal. And it's considered to be Eiver Min Achai, which is Metamei B'Magav Masa, like a Nevela. That's the view of Rav. Shmuel Amar, Ben Lamalo, Ben Lamato. Doesn't matter whether the break is above the Arkuba or below the Arkuba. Imrova Basar Kayam, if the majority of the Basar is there, Zeb Zeb Mutar. Then both the animal and the limb are Mutar. Vim Lav, if not, Eiver Asur Beima Mutaret. The aver is problematic. It's considered as if it's detached aver min achai, whereas the behema itself is not a trefa. And so therefore for Shmuel, the statement in the Mishnah that it's successful being mitayer the animal but not the aver is both when the break is above the arkuba and below the arkuba. It doesn't matter. If you have rov basar, both of them are fine. If you don't have rov basar, whether it's above or below the arkuba, the behema is not a trefa, but the limb that is separated away is going to be problematic. It's going to be as if it was severed, equivalent of Eber Min Achai. Matkif La Rav Nachman the Shmuel. Rav Nachman says to Shmuel, Yomru Eber Mimenu Mutal Bashpa Umuteret. How could it be that you're going to have here a situation in which you're going to take this limb off? Because the Eber is problematic. You're going to cut it off the animal, throw it into the garbage because the Eber is considered to be detached. And the animal, you're going to say, is Muteret? Why would it not be a trefa in that case? Amalei Ravacha bar Ravuna, the Rav Nachman, the Rav Nami. According to Rav, you have the same problem. Yomru Eber Mimenu Mutal Bashpa Muteret. So for Shmuel, the problem exists both above the Arkuba and below the Arkuba. For Rav, it still exists below the Arkuba. Below the Arkuba, if there's no Rov Basar there, the animal is kasher, but the limb is not Nitar Yedei, the Shechita of the animal, and it is considered to be detached, and as if it is Eber Min Achai. So even according to Rav, you have the same problem. You have to throw that limb out that's cut below the Arkuba if there's no Rov Basar, yet the animal is going to be kasher. This is what I meant to ask. Eiver shechayami mena mutal bashpa umutar. The eiver that it lives by is going to be thrown in the garbage, and you're going to say it's muteret, meaning that according to Shmuel, even a break above the arkuba is considered to be kasher the animal. Meantime, you're taking off the limb as if the limb is problematic because it's considered separated away from the animal, and you can see the limb is cut at a location where it should be a trefa, which is above the knee. And yet you're saying that the animal is kasher. How could that be? Shalchu mitam, they sent from Eretz Yisrael, hilchato kavatei d'rav. The halacha is like Rav. Hadar shalchu kavatei d'shmuel. Later on they sent, now the halacha is like Shmuel. Hadar shalchu kavatei d'rav. And then again they sent that the halacha is like Rav. Ve'eiver atzmo mitameh b'masah. And the halacha is like Rav, and therefore the eiver itself is metameh b'masah, meaning it's deemed to be eiver min achai, it's deemed to be detached prior to the death of the animal, which means that it has a keder of eiver min achai. So now, it seems to me that the Gemara brings a Masorah that was waffling somewhat as to whom the halacha is like. At first they paskin like Rav, then they paskin like Shmuel, then they went back to paskin like Rav. When they passed like Rav, they also said the Aver that detaches is like Aver Menachai, it's Metamema Masa, Meite Rav Chista. How could you say that? Lo imtihara shchitat trefa ota veta Aver amidul daba. This was Rabbi Meir's claim in the Mishnah against the Chachamim. We brought a bright that they added in the word Aver amidul daba, which is fine, shchita can take away the tumat nevela from a trefa, from that animal itself, or from a limb that is hanging onto it. Davar shebegufa. That's because it's part and parcel of the body of the animal itself. Therefore, it can be metaheret. Titaheret aubar, davar sheinu gufa. Why do you think it can then protect the ubar, the limb of the ubar that left the mother, and then is considered to be like an eiver min achai or an eveila? How could it be that the shechita of the mother is successful at being metaheret that? It's not an extrapolable logic. It doesn't necessarily flow from the fact that if the animal can be nitar yedei de shechita, that the ubar can also. The animal is its body itself. The ubar is a separate entity. And who says that it should work there? But you see in that statement of Rabbi Meir that Eiver HaMedul Dalba agrees that it is nitar yedei de shechita. So why do we say here that Rav says that the limb that is Medul Dalba is classified as being mitabeh memasah, which is that it is considered to be Eiver Min Achai? Well, even Rabbi Meir, who's dissenting opinion in the Mishnah over there, thinks that Eiver HaMedul Dalba is covered by that. Samalei Rabbo, Hadurei Apirchei Lomaloch. What are you going around chasing questions from a Braita? Oti Mimatnitin. Just ask on Rab from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nishkata Beima Hukshuru Bidamea. If you shech the animal, the dam provides the heksher, the kabel tumah, for the tumat ochlim that could possibly come here. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo hukshiru. Rabbi Shimon says that it's not hukshiru. Again, we discussed this back on Ayin Gimel Amud Bet, and we're going to see it in the Mishnah upcoming on Kul Fakab Zayin Amud Bet. So what the Makogas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon is. But suffice it to say that Rabbi Shimon's disagreement with Rabbi Meir is only in regards to whether the dam is makshir, the animal. But he does not argue fundamentally on what Rabbi Meir says over here, that it is classified as being tumat ochlim, or the possibility of tumat ochlim over here. which means that the Aver does not have inherent Tumah to it. So it's not an Avela, it's not an Aver Minachai, it's considered to be a part and parcel of the animal. So you see that a Mishnah is telling you that we're speaking about something that has Tumah Tochlim. And the Mishnah there begins, Ha'Aver Ba'Batsara Medul Dalim. That's the beginning of the Mishnah. So we're speaking about Aver Medul Dal, Batsara Medul Dal. Over here, Rav is telling us it has Tumah Aver Minachai. The Mishnah over there says it doesn't have any Tumah. It can be primed to accept Tumah Tochlim, but it has no inherent Tumah to it. So how do you reconcile Rav with that Mishnah over there? Amalei, Matnita Nikad Dechuye Kid Dachinan. You can be Doka the Mishnah the way we did back on Ayin Gimel Amud Bet. Because on Ayin Gimel Amud Bet, we said the Mishnah is not speaking about an Aver. It's rather speaking about Basar. Basar that separates away from the animal. And basar that separates away from the aver minachai of the animal. Both of those basar are considered to be tehorim. They don't have tumat nevela, tumat aver minachai from them. Because basar minachai is not aver minachai. And even aver minachai, when the basar is poresh mimenu, that basar doesn't have the status of aver minachai. Because it's only aver minachai when it's an aver. The basar separates away. And that's what the Mishnah was discussing. That's the way we answered on Ayin Gimel Amud Bet, as to what the meaning of that Mishnah is over there, in order to understand what the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan was adding for us over there, to say that the Mishnah only taught us that information, not more than that. And Rav over here will say the same thing, and therefore the Mishnah is not a stira for him. Kisalek Rabbi Zeira, when Rabbi Zeira went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechei l'Rabbi Yirmiyah, he found the Yoti B'Kamar l'Hashmatata. He was saying over this, the way that Rav had said it, the Rabbi Yirmiyah was a Talmud of Rav. And he was saying over what Rav said. So Rabbi Yirmiyah had gone up to Eretz Yisrael. He was saying over what Rav said. Amar lei yeyasher. Rabbi Zera says that's right. V'chein targama Aryoch b'Bavel. So too is the way that Aryoch in Bavel says it. Aryoch manu. Who's Aryoch? It's Shmuel. Shmuel is known as Aryoch. Rashi over here quotes from the pasuk in Parshat Lech Lecha of Aryoch Melech Elasar. So Aryoch is like a king, and as Rashi says, he'll talk about David Dinei. Shmuel is like the king when it comes to Dinei Mimonot, because Halacha is always like Shmuel b'Dinei Mimonot. Halacha Rabbi Surei, Halacha ke Shmuel b'Dinei. So therefore, he's the king of Dinim, and that's why they called him Aryoch. That's one way. The other possibility is Aryoch is the name of a Persian king, and he was saying that Shmuel is like Aryoch, like the Persian king, who can dictate the laws. So too Shmuel dictates the laws. Or it could be a play on Aryoch, Ari, meaning like the lion. But like the lion is the king of the animal, so too Shmuel is the king of Dinim. Those are different ways to explain what is meant over here. Ah, Miflag Pelig. Forget that it's not even Dinim Mamonot over here. Shmuel argued on Rav. We saw before that Rav and Shmuel argued on this point. How can you tell me, Rabbi Zeira, that Shmuel says the same thing as Rav? The answer is, Hoderei Shmuel, the Gabe Rav. Shmuel changed his mind and came over to the Rav's position over here, likely because of the question that we asked before, which is, according to Shmuel, you're cutting a limb in the area which is considered to be a treifah, and you're telling me that the leg is problematic, you have to throw it out, but the animal is fine? How could you say that when you have an etzim that's broken at that point? It's true that the Mishnah said nechtach, that it was cut off at that point, but the etzim being broken over there should have the same impact as the cutting of the limb up there. And therefore, Shmuel changed his mind to be like that of Rav. Tanu Rabbanan. Nishpara etzem, v'yatza l'chutz. If the etzem broke, and now it is sticking out. Im or ubasar chufim et rubo mutar. If there is flesh and skin that is covering the majority of it, it's fine. Im lav asur. If not, then it is problematic. V'kama rubo. What does it mean, the robe? Ki'ata Rav Dimiyam Rav Yochanan Rov Ovyo. It's the robe of the width of the bone. V'amri lo, and some say Rov Hekefo, the robe of the circumference of the bone. Amar Apopo, so this goes back to what we discussed earlier in the Masechta, that Rav Apopo is the opinion that tries to reconcile over here, and this is another one of those instances where Rav Apopo reconciles. Hilkach Binin Rov Ovyo. Ubin and Rov Hekefo. We need both opinions over here. We need both Rov Hekefo and Rov Obyo. Now, what the meaning, our Mishnah says that Nishpara Etzem Imro Basar Kayam Shkitato Mitarato. So that we have what's Rov Basar. That's what's being spoken about over here. this etzem that's broken in Rova Basar Kayam Shkitatok Sheira. Rashi says that on the Mishnah, Mefarish B'Gemara. Gemara is going to explain it. So what Rashi sees over here is the Braita is explaining the Mishnah. What does it mean that Nishpara Etzem, that Rova Basara is covering it? And then it will be defined by what Rav said over here. Nishpara Etzem below the Arkuba, Nishpara Etzem above the Arkuba. What are the implications of Nishpara Etzem? Or when is it considered to be Rova Basara is covering it, not Rova Basara is covering it? And basically the Braita is coming to explain that which we saw in the Mishnah. On the other hand, the Rashba, in the name of his Rebbe, the Rabbeinu Yonah, says that the Mishnah and the Braita are not the same thing. Because the Mishnah says, Rov Basar, is speaking about a case where the Etzem didn't go out at all. It didn't come out of the skin or the flesh of the Behema. And therefore, if the Rov Basar is Kayam, even if it doesn't cover the Rov, it's fine. But the Braita is speaking about a case where the Etzem is now protruding out of the leg of the animal. And therefore you need the or and the basar chufim et rubo. So the Rashba brings the name of Rabbi Yonah that the Braita here is not explaining the Mishnah. For Rashi, it seems that the Braita is explaining the Mishnah. And therefore when the Mishnah said rov basar, it meant rov basar im miyotor, that are chufim et rubo. Anything we're going to say in the Braita is true of our Mishnah as well. Whereas the Rashba sees this as being two different cases. The case of the Mishnah where the break is internal, I mean, it's still inside the leg and the structure of the leg. Then you just need Rova Basar Kayam and you're fine. Other than here, we're talking about a bone that broke and now is protruding outwards. It's exposed to the outside. Then you need Or Basar Chupim et Rubo. And that's what we're discussing over here. Rov Hekef, Rovo Vyo and Rov Hekefo. Now, Rashi over here explains the difference between Rovo Vyo and Rov Hekefo in the following manner, which is that they can be independent of each other. Which is that robovio means when the break of the leg, the bone now is extending outside of the leg itself, the surface of the broken bone now is facing out. If the rove of the surface is exposed to the outside, that's robovio, which makes it problematic. If only a minority of that area is exposed to the outside of the break, but the majority is still internal and covered by basar, that's robovio, and that makes it robovio. Rove hekefo is a situation in which the break is completely internal. Which means that, in terms of the robovio, break is all internal to the leg of the animal. But, around the external face of the bone, there's basar missing over there. So the two ends of the bone that are cracked are facing each other, and they're internal to the basar. The basar is surrounding them. But, there is an area of the face of the bone, which is worn away. And Rov Hekefo is the area that surrounds where the break is. The circumference of the break is exposed. You can see that here again. It's Sikhat Kulin. The picture here, that you can see that the bone is broken but completely internal. But on the side of the bone, the face of the bone, there's basar missing so that the side of the bone is now exposed. The area of the shever exposed. And that is Rov Hekefo. In that way, Rashi says you can separate between the two cases, which is that you can have Rov Hekefo be true, even though Rov Hekefo is not true, or you can have Rov Hekefo be true, even though Rov Hekefo is not true, and then Rapapa requires that you have both, Rov Hekefo and Rov Hekefo. That's the way Rashi views it. On the other hand, Tosfot brings a different explanation for the difference between Rov Hekefo and Rov Hekefo, and he says, Zimim nishkakat lazebelozeh. There are times that you can find one without the other. Shena etzem agul legamrei. In a situation in which the bone is not completely circular. Elar marchi mitzad echad u'meitzar mitzad echad. It's wider on one end, narrower on the other end. Obekuntra has pierced v'inyan acher. So clearly Rashi doesn't say what I'm saying. What I'm indicating to you is that rov hevyo and rov hekefo, when the bone is absolutely round, then the rov of the hekef and the rov of the ovi are the same thing. Because the bone itself is completely round. So therefore, if the basar is surrounding it on the rove, it will get rove of its perimeter, which will also cover the rove of the ovi of the bone, and the two will be the same thing. But, in a situation where the bone is narrower at one side, thicker on the other side, it's not completely round, then rove of yo and rove hekefo are actually going to be different then. So if it's more tapered or cone-like in shape, then if the basar is surrounding the wider side over there, it could surround or cover Rov Hekefo, even though it's not covering Rov Hekefo. And vice versa, if the basar is on the narrower side of that cone-shaped thing, then the rov hekefot could be covered even though you're not getting to rov ovdyo. And that's how Tosfot explains the difference, that you can have rov hekef without rov ovdyo, or vice versa, you can have rov ovdyo without rov hekef. It's because the bone tapers, it's not as round or cylindrical, but rather it gets bigger at one end or smaller at the other end, and that provides you the opportunity to have one without the other. Or the other possibility is similar to what we saw with the trachea before, which is if one side of the bone is thicker than the other side of the bone, depending which side you start from, you're going to get to a different point. We're dealing with the halal, the empty space in the middle. The rov ovdyo will be determined by whether you're on the thicker side or the thinner side, whereas rov hekef will be driven about the perimeter of the item. So if the basar is surrounding the thinner side of the bone, then it can get to rov ovdyo even though it's not rov hekefot, because the halal is shifted to that side of the bone. The other hand, if the basar is surrounding it from the thicker side, you might get to rov hekefot even though you're not getting to rov ovdyo. So that's an alternate way to explain it as well. Amar ula amar Rabbi Yochanan, or harehu kibasar. The skin of the animal has the same status as basar. Amar le Rav Nachman ula, Vilema mar or mitzaref the basar. Why are you saying that the or is like the basar? Why don't you just say that the or is mitzaref to the basar, that it can be added to the basar? Rashi explains over here, when he wants him to say or mitzaref the basar, it means lochumra, lebay chetzio or vechetzio basar, that you should require half or and half basar. Not just to say all you need is basar and the or can act like basar, but rather when the Braita says or and basar, it means literally or and basar, half or, half basar, or the natural condition of what would normally be there. Daha or basar ktani, because both or and basar are written. Amalei anan or o basar taninan. Our Braita doesn't have it the way that you have it, which is that it's or u basar, the or and the basar. Rather, ours is or basar, either skin or basar. And then what I'm saying now is that the or has the same din as basar. That's what it means, either or basar. Igadamre, some say they have the version of this way. Amar ula, amar Rabbi Yochanan, or mitzaref le basar. So he does have that view that Rav Nachman challenged ula with, which is, or is mitzaref to basar. Why are you saying that the or is mitzaref to the basar to be exactly like the basar? It means that even up to half of the cover can be provided by the or. That the or and the basar can function as equal parties to be the cover over here. Yeah, Sims, why don't you say or mashlim the basar? The way Rashi means it, means that by roba kitsoi basar, the majority of the cover should be basar and miotoba or. That means that the or can be mitzaref to cover over the etzem, but it can't be up to 50% of what's covering the etzem. Amalei ana uvda yadana. I didn't say it that way because I have a case that I experienced. Daubar gozla, dava bei Rabbi Yitzchak. There was this young bird that Rabbi Yitzchak found the or mitzaref to basar haba. In a situation where there was a bone that was broken, and the or together with the basar provided the cover of the break, to the point where it was rov ovdyo and rov hekefo. Vata they come to Rabbi Yochanan, and they brought it to Rabbi Yochanan to paskin about it. Vakshrei, and he was makshirit. So I thought, or mitzaref lebasar, because it was the or and the basar together that provided the cover. Amalei bar gozla kabart? You're bringing your memra based on that case? He goes, bar gozla the rokich shiny. Skin of a bird is much softer, and therefore it has the same din as the basar. People eat chicken skin because the chicken skin is just like, and soft enough like the basar to eat it. People don't eat the skin of an animal because that's much rougher, and the hide, so you only eat certain areas of the animal where it's very soft, but skin is like basar. But the majority of the animal, the skin is not like the basar. So how could you extrapolate the din from a bird to the din of an animal? It's just not true. They function differently. So Hanu Gidim Rakim, Da'atu, the Kame Dirabo, or Rova, depending on which gears you have over here, there were these Gidim that were very soft, that were brought before Rabo or Rova, Amar Rabo or Amar Rova, Lamai Lechushlo. What do we have to worry about over here? Chado, Damar Rabbi Yochanan Gidim, Shesofan Lakshot, Nimnim alayhem bepesach. First of all, Rabbi Yochanan says that if you have gidim that are soft, even though in the future they're going to harden, you can be joined a chabura of the Pesach based on those soft gidim, and you'll be considered a party to the korban of Pesach. You need at least a kazayit of basar to be part of the chabura of the korban of Pesach. And here, if you have soft gidim, that qualifies. If that's what you are nimna on, that qualifies you. Vod, a Torah chasal momonam shel Yisrael. And also, the Torah is careful about wasting money of Klal Yisrael. So why should we make it into a treifa? We make it into a treifa, the person's going to lose a lot of money over here. So Amalei Rav Papa, this is why likely the Girsa should be Rava, because Rav Papa is a Talmid of Rava. That's likely why the Girsa changed from Rabba to Rava. So Amalei Rav Papa, the Rava, Rav Shimon ben Lakish, v'Isarua Doraita. First of all, you have the dissenting opinion of Rav Shimon ben Lakish, which is that Reish Lakish believes that you can't be Nimna on a Pesach when you're dealing with Gidim, that's Sofan Lach Shot. That's number one. Number two is you're dealing with an Isra Doraita, and an Isra Doraita, you're going to go, first of all, the Chumrah, so you would pass in like Reish Lakish. And number two is, how can you say, Chasa Momonam Shel Yisrael, Din Doraita? And you're going to say, oh yeah, too much money lost, we're going to give a dispensation. That's true by Dinei Derabanan, that by Hefsid Meruba, sometimes there is a dispensation. But by Dinei Doraita, there's no such dispensation. So by Amar, it's my Luchushla? And you say, what should we worry about? Ishtik. Rabba was silent. Va'amayishtik. Why was Rabba silent? Va'amarova. Hilchatok alazi de Rabbi Shimon Lakish behane talat. There are three places where Galocha is like Rabbi Shimon Lakish over Rabbi Yochanan. And this is not one of those places. So therefore the Galocha should have been like Rabbi Yochanan. So why does it matter that Rabbi Yish Lakish has a dissenting opinion? We don't paskin like Rabbi Yish Lakish in that instance. So Rabbi Yochanan should have been good enough. It says, Shani Ocha, Tahadir be Rabbi Yochanan, the Gabe Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Because over here, we know that Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind and agreed with Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Darmalei, because we're going to see this later on Kuf Chaf Bet. We actually saw it earlier in the Masechta Daf Nun Hei Ambet. Darmalei, because when Rabbi Yochanan was challenged by Reish Lakish by the Mishnah later on in the Masechta, he says, Al tak nikteni b'lashon yachid ani shonelta. Don't challenge me from that Mishnah. Because I learned that Mishnah is a dat yochid. That's the way Rashi says it, that it is. It's a dat yochid. And even though the Mishnah says, Ora rosh le'egel arach, ha'meki basar le'tumat ochlim v'nevelot, ba'afa gab v'sobalach shot, even though it's going to become hard in the end. V'hoder bei v'ukma l'hayi ki yechidah. So he reverses position, holds like Reish Lakish, and he says that din in the Mishnah is a opinion of an individual, and therefore I don't hold like it, we don't paskin like it. That's the way Rashi learns it, it's a dat yochid, and I don't paskin like a dat yochid. Tosfot here, and also before, it says that that's not the way to read it. Why does it matter if it's a dat yochid? Throughout Shash Mishnayot, we find Rabbi taking a dat yochid and making it into a stam Mishnah, making it to the sheet of the Rabbim. And that means that the Loch is like it. Just because it was a yechidah that was the source for the Mishnah, doesn't mean the Loch is not like it. But rather, when he says Yechidah, means that his version of the Mishnah had in it Divrei Rabbi Shimon. That his version had the actual attribution to a single individual in it, and therefore the halacha is not like that. Because it wasn't just a stam Mishnah that took an individual's opinion. In his Mishnah, it actually said Divrei Rabbi Shimon, and gave you the individual's position or attribution, and that's why the halacha is not like it. So, the fact that the halacha is only like Reish Lakish in three locations, Kinyan Perot, Kinyan Karka, Becholetz Nuberet, Umatana, Beemtza, all of those are like Halacha Reish Lakish, which does not include our case. You would have thought the Halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and then why did Rava back away from Rav Papa? The answer to that is Rabbi Yochanan also changed his mind here. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to see Rabbi Yochanan finally agrees to Reish Lakish's opinion. That's the case. Then Rav Papa's criticism is right. Because Reish Lakish's opinion is not just Reish Lakish's opinion, in the end it's Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. If that's the case, then Rava should have been machmir over here. How could he say, let's go to Kula? We have the position of Rabbi Yochanan and Chasa Momonam Shel Yisrael. Both of those are not good positions in the face of, first of all, a Din Doraita. Number two, Reish Lakish's opinion, which Rabbi Yochanan adopts, and therefore he should have been machmir in that situation. Okay, we're going to stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Ayin Zayin, Amud Aleph.